15:1. Moses is now going to send 12 men, and I use the term men loosely, into the land of rest to do some specific things. And these things that God asked him to do were specific, and Moses gave them exactly. Verse 1 says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men, that they may search the land of Canaan, which I have given unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them." Now notice again from this morning that he says that they search the land which I give unto the children of Israel. Why they came back thinking they had to fight to win it is beyond me. And I think that's really what keeps us out of the land of rest, because you think whatever you get from God, you got to fight for it. And he said he gave it to you. And the reason they have to fight for it is they went in and they looked at the strength of the enemy, and they looked at it in relation to their own strength, and they said the only way we're going to get this is to fight for it, and they're stronger than we are. And therein lies the tale of really why we don't go into the land of rest, those of you that don't. Now remember he said, send thou men. Men comes from a Hebrew word that means to be frail and to be feeble. It also means to be mortal, which is a human being or a person. So that's everybody in here. He says, I want you to know you're frail and you're feeble. So I'm not sending you in there to fight. Now, if God knows I'm frail and feeble, why in the world is he going to go pick the fight and then send me to fight it? See, he wants me to understand that my physical strength, my intellect, my ability will never get me there. He wants me to know something about myself that he already knows. I am a mortal man, frail and feeble, and without the Lord Jesus Christ, I can do nothing. The problem again with these men that he's going to send in is that they all have personality problems, as we all do. 12 of them. It's no accident that there are 12 possible personality traits in the human being. And so God sent one of each one of those into the world, or into the land of Canaan, so that you wouldn't be able to sit here and say, yeah, but my personality is different. If you're different than one of these 12, you're not a man. You're, I don't know what you are, alien of some kind. Because there's only 12 possible, and he covered them all. In other words, I don't care who you are, how you were trained, what your problem is, you can go into the land of Canaan and come back victorious with a good report. Now, they didn't realize who they were. They thought they were something special, as you all do. You all think you're unique. You've got a special something about you. From where I stand, there is nothing special. It's all just as bad from this vantage point. So he said, what I want you to do is I want to send them into the land of Canaan. Canaan means to be humiliated, to bend the knee, and to bring into subjection. Now, if I already knew I was frail and feeble, why would he send me into the land of Canaan to make me be in subjection to what? The problem is, he said, these people don't know who they are. You don't understand really what your problem is. You think your problem is the solution, and it isn't. And he said, send everyone a ruler among them, and everyone, verse 3, are heads. All these men are heads of the children. So first of all, he said, I want you to send people whose dominant personality characteristic falls in the next 12 categories. In other words, what he really was saying is what really rules you, what is your head, has to go into the land of Canaan to be humiliated, to be brought into subjection, so that you can see what rules you is nothing in comparison to God. And until that happens, you're going to keep saying, I can't quit that. That's stronger than me. And you see, that thing in you hasn't been humiliated, has it? It's not been brought into subjection to the Word of God. You keep exalting it as some high, exalted thing that has more power than God. And your problem is, when you go into the land of Canaan, you come back with an evil report. See, God said, I want you to go in there to have that thing humiliated and brought into subjection. Whatever your problem is, whatever your vice is, whatever your dominant personality characteristic is, God says, I want you to be humiliated. I want that thing brought into subjection. And then he says in verse 3, sent him. He says, I want you to know where you're coming from too, by the way. He said, the Lord sent them from the wilderness of Paran. Paran means ornamental or an external show. Just something that you think you are, but you are really not. What you really are is frail and feeble. What you really are is sick and woeful. See, and that's what we really are. But he says, you're coming from the land of Paran. And Paran means to embellish, to be ornamental, to boast, to make an external display, to show things on the outside as an outside appearance or an outside appearance rather than internal. Paran or external display also means that that exists apart from the mind. In other words, he says, your problem is you're into emotions. We're not thinking the same. Your thoughts and my thoughts are not the same because you're thinking with the emotions, with feelings. So again, in verse 4, he says, now that that exists apart from the mind, that that comes from Paran, that that you think you are, must be taken into Canaan to be humiliated. And remember, the first one was of the tribe of Reuben in verse 4. His name is Shemua, the son of Zakur. Shemua, again, meant to be renowned, to be the center of attention, to be much talked about, to be well-known and publicly discussed, widely but unfavorably spoken about. That wasn't his problem. As Christians, we're widely and unfavorably spoken about. The problem is he was the son of Zakur. And Zakur means to mark so as to be recognized, to be in remembrance, to acknowledge, for people to know the significance of who you are. In other words, he did it just for show. It wasn't that he was renowned. That wasn't the problem. Problem is he still had the wrong father, Zakur. That's why Jesus said, call no man on this earth father. So we talked about Shemua this morning. And then we went to Shaphat in verse 5, the son of Horai. And Shaphat, if you remember, meant to be a judge. This is the individual that goes out judging everyone but himself. And his problem is he's the son of Horai. And Horai meant a cave dweller or a troglodyte. And if you remember, a troglodyte means a creep who lives in a cave. Comes out once in a while, and that's it, man. He just lives all by him lonesome. It's a person who chooses to live alone. A person who chooses to live in seclusion and chooses to live in the low, degenerate way. Now, this is the individual, again, because he's so busy, or she is so busy judging everyone, they can't afford to come out and show you how they live. They live in a glass cave, as I said this morning. They're very secluded people. They don't socialize much. They're too busy judging. They're too busy finding out what's wrong with everybody else. See, that was Shaphat's problem. He was judging so much, but he was the son of Horai. He was judging everybody but himself. And God says, you know, one day we're going to judge angels. But God didn't send us to judge sinners. Sin, yes, not sinners. So we won't have to go in great detail on Shaphat and Horai. And then there was Caleb, the individual said, oh, he was one of the good guys, not to begin with. Caleb, in verse 6, means to be forcible, to yelp or attack as a dog. It's one who has force, uses force, and is affected by force. Lots of Calebs in this room. You won't do anything until the pressure won't allow anything else. You won't do right until you are forced. And since God doesn't force you to do right, you never do right. But all your vices are compelling forces. And they don't ask for your opinion. They make you do wrong. And since you're a Caleb, you're of force, it falls right down your alley. And so then you use the compulsions and the things that you have in your life as an excuse. Caleb is always open for a fight. He boasts, it means to boast noisily, to use force, to speak against, to criticize, to denounce hostile offensive action. Now he's the son of Jephunneh. Now to be forcible is good. One day when Caleb listens to Joshua, this forcible attitude is going to be good when it's directed right. But right now, he's the son of Jephunneh, and basically what it means, he's prepared to face and to come on. He's ready for a fight at the drop of a hat, ready for an argument at the drop of the hat. And then you remember that of the tribe of Issachar, there was Igal, the son of Joseph. Igal the Avenger, the one that the kinsman redeemer, he's always claiming what belongs to everybody else. He wants to tell you things that are none of his business, or yours either. He's always trying to come to your rescue, even though you haven't asked him. He's offering you information and advice and counseling, whether you ask for it or not. And he's the son of Joseph. And Joseph means to add and to augment, to make it greater in order to continue. In other words, Igal is the one that feeds your need to continue to do the wrong. You see, one of them starts you, the other one gives you the ability to continue. That's Joseph. And then we come where we left off this morning. Oshea. Verse 8. Of the tribe of Ephraim, Oshea the son of Nun. Now Oshea really is Joshua, but not yet. Right now he's Oshea. Oshea means to be open, to be free, to be safe, and to have victory. Now understand this. This is a good quality in this man. And this is why Moses is going to pick him and change his name to Joshua, which you'll understand in a minute what that means. But you see, Oshea is open. And the reason he's open, because he's free. He has no compelling vices. I didn't say he was perfect. I said he's open and he's free. He's also safe and he has victory. Now, the first characteristic of Oshea is he's open. Open means not closed, not covered, and not clogged. You can talk to him. He'll listen. Open means to be in a state which permits freedom of view. He can always take a look at whatever perspective there is, and then he makes his judgment. Open means to be without covering. Open means not settled or decided. See, if you would come into this church and not be settled and decided already before I preach, you would be an Oshea. But why in the world would God send you here to listen to a message that's already settled and decided? And if you were right and it's settled and decided, why am I wasting my time preaching it? Because you're wrong, that's why. And even if you weren't wrong doctrinally, you're wrong in position, because you've got it settled and decided, and that's it. You don't hear anything. And that's dangerous, because you're just liable to learn something if you listen. But see, Oshea is open. He's without cover. It's not settled. It's not decided yet. He's also free. Free means not in bondage, not under the control of some other person or some arbitrary power. And you see, that other person that you're under control of could be you, your habits. And that arbitrary power can be your appetites, your culture, your tradition. And this man is free. Free also means able to act or think without compulsion, open to all, and without obligation. He was also safe. Safe means in sound condition, in good health, unharmed, free, whole, free from damage, secure. And then he also had victory. Victory means final and complete supremacy or superiority in battle and success. It sounds like this man has it made. He has one problem. He's the son of Nun. If he was just the son of God, he'd have it made. Look at all those good qualities. Open, free, safe, victorious, not closed, not in bondage, well-preserved, in good, sound condition, unharmed, whole, unable to cause damage, victorious, final, complete supremacy, superiority in battle and success. You would think the man had it made, and he does, with one exception. He is the son of Nun. Nun means to flit and to vanish away. It means to make to flee away and put to flight. Flit means to flutter, or to change or shift about. Now here is Oshea, victorious one day, and see if this starts to be familiar. Oh, thank the Lord, I've had victory in Jesus. 15 minutes later, you're flitting and flying all over the place, son of Nun, and all of a sudden you have no victory. You see, the problem with this man is he's got all the good qualities going for him, but he's hanging on to Dad, and Dad is shifting. Dad changes around. And so you see, he can't put two victories back to back. Like everybody in this room, you've all been blessed in one area or another, and several of you in more than one area. But the problem is you flip when you ought to sit. A whole lot of flitting going on around here. And I can watch some of you flitting, you know. Great wind coming. I thought the Holy Spirit was coming in. You just don't stay with the program. You see, and that was Oshea's problem. And Moses knew it because God told him. At the end of this, you're going to see, God's going to say, don't send him out until you change Oshea's name. We got to cut him free from this flitting nun. This individual that there's victory one day and it's defeat the next day. That's why you've quit your thing, whatever it is, 15,000 times. And 15,000 and one time, you've started it all over again. You done flipped when you should have sipped. But you see, God says, look, you could have victory, couldn't you? You've had it. You've quit more than once. But all of a sudden, it vanishes away, the son of Nun. Keep this one in mind. We'll come back to him. And then in verse 9, there's another man that needs to be sent out. Another personality characteristic. It says of the tribe of Benjamin, Paltai, the son of Raphu. Paltai means to be delivered, to escape, to carry away safe. See, Paltai is cured. He's safe. But he's safe and cured according to Raphu, his dad. And Raphu means cured or mended by stitching. See, he's not really cured. He's kind of patched together. Because you see, Raphu means to mend by stitching. To mend in order to cure. To mend in order to make better. Now, mend means to make better, to refine, and to set right by making atonement for and making amends for. In other words, you make excuses for yourself, for your children, for your vices, for your habits, and you say you're cured. You're just stitching. You're making amends. You're making excuses. And sure, you quit. And yes, it's true that you have the grace of God, and if you want to kill yourself with those things, you can, and God still loves you. But it's also true you're a fool for killing yourself. So you see, this is the man who, he is safe. He knows he's saved. He's trusting in the shed blood of Christ. But his life is a series of stitching things together and repairing things by mending them and making amends. Won't trust the atoning of Christ to get rid of the thing. He'll atone for it himself by saying, well, I'll die early. And I'll suffer for it. That's crazy, when Christ suffered for it so that you wouldn't have to. Now, he also, not only does he mend, but he likes to make amends. Amends means something given or done to make up or to pay a fine. And a fine is a sum of money or something paid as punishment in order to settle a matter. Penalty for an offense. In other words, he's saved. He's trusting his soul has been atoned for, but he hasn't, has he? He's still paying fines, isn't he? He's still making amends. He's still suffering by doing things in the flesh that are hurting him, and he thinks he's cured because his soul is saved and sanctified and on its way to heaven, but he's killing himself. He's stitching up a storm, crazy quilt. Now, he does it by stitching, by the way. Now, stitching means to heal, to cure, and to repair. And do you know where the word stitching comes from? Suture. See, he's sutured. He doesn't want to be healed. He wants to be sewed up. Now, let me tell you what suture means. People are always trying to get me to sew them up. suturum. Suture means the act of joining together by sewing, and it's the method of sewing together or joining together the two edges of a wound. In other words, when you suture, you are trying to heal a wound. You're trying to protect it from infection coming from the outside. The problem with people like this, they're animals. And you know how animals heal wounds? They want their head licked, don't they? You want to be told sweet things. See? They want their wounds licked. And what wound am I talking about? Wound means two things. Obviously, it means an injury to the body. But wound also means any hurt or injury to the feelings, to the honor, to the pride, and to the ego. Now, my job is to cause wounds to your pride and your ego. Why in the world am I going to lick them after I do them? You think I'm crazy? And then there's this thing of licking the wounds, suturing, mending by stitching, refu. Lick means to bring into a certain condition by passing the tongue lightly over. But lick also means to overcome or to control. In other words, what they want to be told is sweet, light things that ultimately will overcome you and control you. And I know it soothes your wounds. I know when you leave here and your refu has been raked over the coals up one side and down the other and it's bleeding up a storm. I know you're looking for someone to tell you, now you're all right. That preacher doesn't know what he's talking about. This is just a wound. And he puts out their little sutures, their needle and thread, and they start licking your wounds and soothing you down, just like an animal. Trying to mend. And by soothing it and passing the tongue lightly over, saying, oh, God loves us. That's as lightly as I can lick, child. God loves you no matter what you do. That's true. No matter what you do, God loves you. But what you're doing to yourself is killing you, and that God isn't too thrilled about. But see, this individual, this refu, wants to escape. He wants to be safe by having his wounds licked. He wants to be mended and stitched. He wants you to make amends for him. You atone for him. And how do you do that? Take away the sin. Isn't that what atonement means? Carry away the sin? Well, that's not my job. That belongs to Jesus. I'm trying to tell you what you have. You take it to him in confession. You want me to carry it away from you. Well, I'm not your refu, and I refuse to be. That's your daddy. You want your wounds licked. And you know, incidentally, you come in here with the hurts, and you think I'm the one that wounded you. You were hurt out there. You're coming in here for licking. But not the kind you think you're going to get. And you're not going to be ticking after this licking, I'll tell you that right now. So see, this is a problem. This attitude has to be taken to Canaan and humiliated. And this man has to understand that's getting you nothing. That's not helping you. That has to be brought into subjection. But in this case, unfortunately, it is not. The man's going to come back just the way he left. And that's why he makes an evil report. Now there's another character in this play. Verse 10. Of the tribe of Zebulun, Gadiel, the son of Sodai. Now Gadiel means the fortune of God. Now this individual, super spiritual cat, this guy. See, he's blessed by God. And you heard some of his, and how are you, bro? I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I say, great. And then I'll bet my wife this and my job that. Well, where's all these blessings? I'm blessed. He's a Gadiel. The fortune of God. The problem is he gets it through Sodai, his daddy. Sodai means a confidant. It means a company of persons in close deliberations, intimacy. Sodai means a secret assembly. Sodai means inward secret counsel. This is the guy that figures it all out for himself. and it all comes from inside. I'm going to tell you what comes from inside. And it do not belong in the church. We got a room for it back there. That would come from the inside. Paul said, in me that is in my flesh dwelleth no good thing. And you want to trust what's in you, your feelings, your emotion, your tradition, your culture, your background. You want to trust that as a son of Sodai. It means inward secret counsel. Let me tell you how smart this individual is. First, his counsel is inward, and that means internal. It means of the inner nature of a person. In other words, this guy's talking to himself. It means directed toward the inside, intimate, familiar, and private. So it's inward counsel. But it's also secret counsel. What a genius this character is. Now, secret means that that's kept from public knowledge or from the knowledge of a certain person. But it also means that that is beyond general knowledge or understanding, mysterious. Now, this is the individual that gets all these secret, mysterious revelations that nobody, including him or her, can understand. They're just brimming over with prophecies and revelations. But they're inward. You ask them, where did you get that? Oh, I can't tell you, brother. I'm blessed. Hallelujah. But where did it come? Just from my soul and my spirit. I'll pass on that. Thank you. See, what they have is beyond general knowledge or understanding. In other words, nobody knows it and nobody understands it. Is it any wonder when they talk to you, say, what did he say? Well, the problem is it's beyond understanding. Mysterious. Esoteric. I like that word, esoteric. Secret also means something that's not revealed, not understood, and not explained. Now, if it's inward and secret, and it's not revealed, not understood, and not explained, then what are you talking about? They're just words. Inward counsel. Going to themselves and their own spirit to have revelation and bypassing the Son of the living God, the living Word of God. They won't listen to this. They'll listen to themselves. It's inward and secret and esoteric, by the way. See, really what they're doing, they're talking to themselves, aren't they? But it's esoteric. And esoteric means that that is beyond the understanding of most people. See, esoteric really means you look with one eye to the outside to see the problem. Then with the other eye, you look inside to get the solution. Because esoteric comes from the word esotropia. And esotropia means one eye is focused on the object and the other one's turned inward. In other words, cross-eyed. See, what God is saying, look, gumbo. When you try to fix one eye on your problem and say, oh my God, what am I going to do? And the other eye inside of you to look for the solution, you are suffering esotropia. Which is where we get the word esoteric. Which is what you think you're doing. And esotropia means nothing more than to be cross-eyed. In other words, if you don't put both eyes on Jesus, here's the problem with these people. They were suffering from esotropia. They went out and they said, the children of Anak are here. Look at these huge monsters, one eye on Anak. And then they said, and we were grasshoppers in our own sight, the other eye on themselves. Now, you send out 12 cross-eyed people, what are you going to get when they come back? Huh? You're going to get a bunch of people with bumps on their head. They're going to be bumping into each other. Oh, they're cross-eyed. Let me tell you something. If you don't put both eyes on Jesus Christ and get your eye off the problem, for God's sake, and for heaven's sake, get the eye off yourself. You are not the solution. Everything is right. Both eyes on Jesus, and you'll have no esotropia. And you won't be dealing with all this esoteric, metaphysical nonsense that'll do nothing more for you than sit you in a corner somewhere and have you look at your navel. If you're so enthralled with it, I'll take a Polaroid of it and have a good time. But don't sit in the corner and do it. That's crazy. They sit there, oh, mommy, by your own, And then they end up just looking at their own belly button and say, oh, I've got revelation. From what? It's Lent. It's not revelation. They're looking into their own center. They says, I must be centered, and I must look at the center of the universe. That's the center of the universe? That's the Lent bank. That's what that is. It needs a cleaning, not a reading. How can you read your own navel? What is it saying? There you go. Alms for the love of Allah. And while we're on the subject, you know what the word Allah means? Curse. And I'm not going to worship no God whose name is curse. If you can forget it. So see, here are these people, this person who says, I'm blessed. Why? Because I'm in tune with myself. I've understood myself, and I've made allowances for me. I'm so esoteric. No, you're esotropic. You're cross-eyed. You couldn't hit a barn if you were inside of it. You can't even know if you're in a barn. You're in bad shape, partner. Clarence, the cross-eyed lion. I'm going to change this guy's name to Clarence. I don't like Gadiel. It's too hard to pronounce. But besides this, his counsel is inward. It's secret counsel. Now, let me ask you this. All we have to do is look at the meaning of the word counsel, and you'll see it's impossible to do it inward and secret with yourself, because counsel means a mutual exchange of ideas. Now, how in the world are you going to get anything out of it if you're exchanging ideas with yourself? You're talking to yourself. Bad enough, you're cross-eyed. If we're in the image and likeness of... You know, isn't it going to be wonderful when we learn this and get in the image and likeness of God? In one swoop, in one sermon, I can cure all cross-sightedness. And all you people that are talking to yourselves. Listen, if you went out there and did it, they put a white jacket on you and they'd strap your arms behind your back. I could report you if I didn't love you so much. It's all I hear, talking to yourself. Well, I don't think that's the problem. Well, what do you think? Well, I think it's this. Well, and they just sit there, and I said, well, let me know when you come back to earth there, esoteric Swami. Their counsel means a mutual exchange of ideas. It takes two. But you got one eye on the problem and the other eye on yourself, so you're cross-eyed, and now you're talking to yourself. Counsel also means a mutual exchange of opinions. The discussion of that mutual exchange of opinions and the deliberation. So you know what inward secret counsel means? You have to talk and deliberate with yourself. Isn't it any wonder you get all those stupid answers? You're talking to yourself. You may think you're talking to God, but you're a sodai. You are trying to find the answer, and that's why your answer always makes allowance for your appetites. That's why your answer always leaves you right where you're at, in the middle of the wilderness. Why? Because you're going to come back with an evil report, and you're going to say, I can't. Why? Because you talked to yourself, and you asked yourself. And I'm telling you, I wouldn't trust you. Listen, if I had to choose as to who I'm going to trust, it certainly would not be you. Now, counsel also means advice resulting from a mutual exchange of ideas, their discussion, and their deliberation. In other words, this sodai, inward secret counseling, is nothing more than talking to yourself in a state of esotropia or being cross-eyed. Is it any wonder you have no perspective that means anything? Your point of view, as best, is distorted? You're cross-eyed. And then on top of that, you're talking to yourself. And you think that's the fortune of God. You think it's a blessing of God to be cross-eyed and talking to yourself. Sounds to me like you're kind of halfway gone. And you need a good ophthalmologist. You need to have somebody check you out. There's something wrong with you. No, but this individual says, this is a blessing of God. I can read my navel. I can tell what's going on in the universe. I hope. I'd just soon get to San Diego Union, if you don't mind. Now we have another. I like this guy, too. Verse 11. Now understand again, these are the ones that have to go into Canaan and be humiliated, or you're going to bring back an evil report. You can't come back and talk about these individuals as if they're inferior to what's in the land of Canaan. Gadai, of the tribe of Joseph, namely of the tribe of Manasseh, Gadai, the son of Susai. I just soon pronounce that Susie, but I don't think he'd appreciate it. It's properly pronounced Susai. Now, Gadai also means fortunate, or one who distributes fortune. Not fortunate of God, not blessed by God. This guy just blessed. It's not by God now. The other one meant blessing by God, fortunate of God. This guy is just lucky. He's fortunate. Now, his problem is he's the son of Susai. And Susai means to be horse-like. And horse-like or Susai means to skip for joy. Now understand, this man is fortunate. He's happy, but he has to, in order to have joy, he has to skip for joy. That's what Susai means. And you know what skip means? Now he's skipping for joy now. Skip means to direct the attention from one point to another, omitting what lies between. In other words, the only way this guy can ever be happy, he has to skip reality. He just pretends like it doesn't exist. He doesn't want to talk about his vices, his problems, his aches and pains, the things. He just skips over those. And he says, well, God is this, and he's that, and the Lord this, and the Holy. Man, that's skipping for joy, partner. Here's the way they do it. The past was wonderful. The future, that's point number one. The future looks sensational, that's point number two. But you skip the present, which stinks. So see, the only way you can be happy is by skipping. See, this is the individual who counts himself fortunate, but he has no grasp of reality at all. And this is the individual who comes to church, does not want to be talked about, doesn't want me to talk about that point, he's skipping. Because there goes his joy right out the window. That's why you get upset. My friend Flicka, you're horse-like. Mr. Ed, the talking horse. You don't want to talk about that one point. You want to, let's skip that. I don't skip. We don't skip for joy here. That's the thing that's killing you. And listen, the skip joys are the individuals who have to have, they eventually gravitate to some kind of a drug. Some kind of a mind-altering something. They have to go to something to make them feel happy just for a period so they can skip the reality. And then when they come down off of that and reality is here, now they're ready to skip again. And it can be drugs, it can be food, it can be caffeine, nicotine, temper, sex. I don't care what you use. You're skipping for joy. See, the joy of the Lord is constant, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 366 this particular year, thank you. But this man skips for joy. He counts himself fortunate and blessed by not dealing with his reality. And God help the individual that tries to point out to him this and this is wrong. What about this? They don't want to talk about it. They want to skip it because, see, they have no joy any other way. Can you see why they're coming back with an evil report? Now, verse 12. Of the tribe of Dan, Amiel, the son of Gamali. Amiel means the people of God. The people as a congregated unit of flock. Here's the church. But it's a particular segment of the church. See, it's a blessing to be the people of God. It's a blessing to be a part of the congregated unit. Forsake not the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is. It's a blessing to be a member of God's flock. Here's the problem. He's a son of Gamali. And Gamali means one who labors and carries heavy burdens. See, he's the son of labor. And labor means, Gamali means physical or mental exertion. You can't just go to the Word and read it and just get the words and write them down. That's too simple. Somehow or other, he's got to work at it. He's got to conjure something up, get it out of his navel. How they do that, I have no idea. But labor also means to move slowly and with difficulty. Now, let's just not get fanatical here. I mean, after all, Rome wasn't built in a day, and I've been quitting this habit for 45 years. Come on. I don't mind you moving slowly, but are you going in reverse? The malai also means to be afflicted or burdened. And here's the part that you need to get a hold of. This is why they stood so long in the wilderness. It means to spend too much time and effort on something. That's labor. Too much time and effort to go from Egypt to Canaan. 3.5 weeks, 40 years, and some of them never did make it. Spend too much time and too much effort on it. And what is it? It's nothing more than an excuse to give you the opportunity to keep doing it over and over and over, because after all, we're still not in the land of rest. You're the son of Gamaliel. The son of labor, everything's a job for you. Everything's hard and burdensome, and you suffer for the Lord. And then you become burden-bearing. Burden means anything that one has to bear up or put up with. Burden means a heavy load of work or duty, heavy responsibility, heavy sorrow. It means to be loaded down and oppressed. That's the burden you're carrying. That's the burden you think God put on you. But Jesus said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light, but not you, Gamaliel. You're going to come back with an evil report. Every day, there's people in this church make an evil report. God said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light, and you come back every day and say, this is a heavy-duty problem. I can't. Well, you're the son of Gamaliel. You're making an evil report, and you're going to make twirls and setbacks in the wilderness until your carcass dies out there. I'm not going to grieve for you, by the way, because you know better. See, so to these people, everything is a burden. But here's the problem with this. It means burden bearing. Now, you think bearing means just carrying. No, no, no. You know what bearing means? To give birth to. Now, you tell me what you think your burden is, and that's what you're going to bear. That's what you have to give birth to. And then when it finally becomes a reality, you say, see, I told you. I said, yes, I know you did. And that's when it became, see, that's when you start carrying it around, gestating it, nurturing it, giving it birth, and it finally came time to go into labor, Gamaliel, so that your burden could be born, it could be birthed. See, whatever you say your burden is, you got to give birth to it. Do you understand how Satan has got you oppressed and tricked and under a heavy yoke? Why? Because you say it's too hard. It's a burden, and Jesus said it's easy, and now you've got to bear it. You've got to give birth to it. And yes, I know it becomes a reality, but I'm telling you why. Bearing also means to support. Once you bear it, then you've got to support it. And you can't divorce it. The court will take you, and you have to pay child support, the arrearages, and court costs, by the way, and attorney fees. Well, this is spiritual. We don't pay court costs and attorney fees. Where's that basket we pass? You got to pay for this. Don't you understand that? Don't come free. Bearing also means not only to support, but to sustain, to take care of, to put up with, and to tolerate. Now you've got to raise that unholy child that you bore, which is your burden, which you said you had, which Jesus said, I relieved you of. That's your evil report. And I know that we don't live in the Holy Land. I know we're not making a physical trip from Egypt to Canaan. But you're just as stuck with your burden and making just as much an evil report as these people were. Why? Because you say you can't. It's too heavy. It's too hard. You don't understand. Now you've got to have that child. And then after you have it, you have to support it. You have to feed it. You have to take care of it. And you have to, it's yours from now on. Tell you the truth, if I were you, I'd just as soon do an Abraham with it and take it up there on the hill and say, get this thing out of my sight. But no, you'd rather be burden-bearing. You'd rather be Anamiel, the son of Gamaliel, making an evil report and wandering in the wilderness. Verse 13, I like them all, you know. Because every one of these, I attach a name to it, and it's all Reuben. Of the tribe of Asher, Sether, the son of Michael. Yether, Thether, this one, yeah, Thether's.
This is secret and mysterious. But see, he's the son of Michael. And Michael, remember what manna means? Well, Michael comes from a composite of a word that says, who is like God? And the other part of the Hebrew word that makes up the word Michael is where we get the word manna. And manna means what, how, why, and when. These are the individuals say, oh, nobody could understand this book. It's just to your own interpretation. No one can come up. There is no absolutes here. Whatever you think, it's up to you. Everybody makes their own manna. Remember, some of you ground it up, and everybody made cakes out of it. Some beat it, some ground it. Some Chicago brother that made pizzas and Uncle Ben's, all those things. They sit there and they say, what do I know? What did Moses say? I don't, what, how, why? Whatever, I don't know. Let's just do something. See, he plays dumb. You got kids like that. Go clean up your room. What? Go clean up your room. How? Go clean up your room. Why? I said go clean up your room. Well, when? You got a Sether on your hands, man. You need to understand that all he's trying to do, all they're trying to do is conceal and not do anything by pleading ignorance. And man, the woods are full of people like that, aren't they? Always, always pleading ignorance. I'll never make it tonight. I'm going to give you one more, though. Numbers 13, 14. Of the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, as in knees, the son of Vathsai. Nabi, you got to watch out for Nabi. This guy is cool. Nabi means occult. Now some would say, oh no, devil worship. Demon spirits, yes. But let me tell you what Nabi means, occult. See, because occult means to hide something. Occult means to put something out of view. Now listen to this, especially you women. You are the practitioners to the nth degree of this Nabi occult. I'll curse your knees, every one of you, if you don't listen to this. You walk out of here with the Nabiest knees on this earth. Occult, Nabi, means to hide in the bosom, protecting that unholy spirit that's in your children, protecting that unholy spirit that's in you, those habits in you that you make excuses for. You cherish. Nabi means to cherish with affection and to cherish with love, to hide in the bosom, to secrete. All those things that you're trying to protect. Cherish means that you feel or show love for. It means that you take good care of, that you protect and foster. It means to hide in the bosom. And it's important what the bosom means. It means a woman's breasts. But that's not all it means. Because men, you're not above that. None of us are. The word bosom means the breast as the source of feelings. Now, whatever you're bosoming, you're feeling. Whenever you start thinking with the rational mind, whenever you start thinking logic, logos, the word of God, you're not going to be bosoming nothing. And you're not going to deal with anything with your feelings, because your feelings are where the breasts are. The breasts as the source of feelings. That's what bosom means. In other words, whatever you have a feeling for, a cherishing feeling for, it's because you want to protect it. And let me tell you something. You cannot protect what's right with the occult, Nabi. So whenever you say, oh, but she's my baby, or you don't understand. I understand what it is. It's Nabi. It's occult. You're trying to hide it in the bosom. You're trying to protect the wrong in that child. You don't want to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. You're making excuses. And the worst thing about it is when the child becomes you. and you start nurturing and hiding and bosoming your own faults, occulting and hiding. Now you're Nabi, the son of Vasfi. Now why does Nabi want to hide everything and cherish it and protect it and make excuses for it? Because Vasfi means to continue to do a thing, to increase it more and more, and to prolong it, because you want to continue to do it. That's why you do it. That's why you secrete it. That's why you cover it with the occult. Why? Because you want to do it. You want to prolong this thing. And God said, look, you're not going to smuggle that stuff into the land of rest. And if the only way we can keep the land of rest clean and pure is for you to die with your daddy out in the wilderness, that's what's going to happen. Your soul will go to heaven, but your flesh is not going to come into the land of rest. You're going to continue to be subject to your compulsions, your appetites, your hungers for the rest of your natural life, until you understand if these people could not get into the land of rest because they wouldn't give up their past, how are you going to do it and make God a respecter of persons and have God deal with an unequal balance? And because you're spouting Jesus Christ and you're doing this or that, God's going to have an unequal balance and say, I'll make an exception for you. No, my friend, no exceptions. Why? Because it's so easy to get in. All you have to do is come back with the right report. I wish I had time to finish that so you can see how this all fits together. For God's sake, whatever you do, come back Wednesday. And when you see how this thing culminates, you're going to see how simple it is to go into the land of rest, and why these people couldn't make it in, and why they wandered for 40 years, and why only one man, Joshua, whose name was changed, who Caleb followed, who Caleb then spoke what Joshua said, then and only then were they allowed to come in. Why Moses didn't even make it, for another reason. Now understand this. If Moses didn't get into the land of rest, and all of these people didn't get into the land of rest for these specific reasons, do you really think God's going to make an exception for you? Well, all you have to do is look at your life up to this point. Has he made one yet? And all he's asking you, say, well, how can I change that? He didn't. Nabi's problem wasn't that he was Nabi. Nabi's problem is he was the son of Vasfi. He was being Nabi in order to continue. Now, if he'd have gone in there and said, my father is now the father of heaven, my God in heaven, and we are well able, we can go in there and take this land. We don't have to fight for it, by the way. Joshua never said we had to go fight for it. You know what he said? Caleb is the one that said we had to go fight for it. Joshua said God's given it to us. I'm convinced there had to be. It was unnecessary for them to go in there and fight. God had already given it to them. But you know what happened? Evil report. Even finally, after Joshua and Caleb said the right thing, it wasn't totally right because they had to go in and fight for what was given to them. And you think you have to go fight for what's given to you. And that's why you've given up. You've tried to fight the habit. You've tried to fight this thing that's got you, these things. You've tried to fight them. And I said, that's silly. He's already given it to you. You know why you're fighting it? You've made an evil report. And let me tell you why your fight is going down the tubes. Because even though it was unnecessary to fight, the people did not prevail unless the hands of the ordained man of God were held up by the people. You go ahead and cut me down all you want. You're going nowhere. And on top of that, you're fighting an unnecessary battle. Anywho. And some people say, oh boy, this guy doesn't like women. He's always talking against mothers. I've been pretty heavy on daddies for the last several sermons, haven't I? And it's not going to get any better, pops. You've got to cut the ties with these things. We only have one Father, and he's in heaven. And we are the bride of Christ. And if that isn't enough family for you, there's something wrong with you. And you're in the wrong building if that's not enough family for you. I got the time, and I got the energy, but I don't want to overstep my bounds here. We got more of these characters to go through. And Wednesday, when you come back, you're going to say, my God, some of you will say, that's too simple. And I'm going to say, well, how else could it be for you to get it? That's why it's simple, because God knows you, and God knows me. So first, I want you to understand what the problem is. Then when I show you the solution, it's so simple, you're going to say, well, why couldn't I see that? because God didn't tell you. He told me. I didn't see it either. I was told faith cometh by hearing. And that's the only way you're going to get it. Let's stick together on this thing. We're going to make it to the land of rest. I guarantee you that. All you got to do is listen. Brother Bob, would you close?